You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the Game, yeah, Building the Game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today's Monday, January 18th, 2015. Listening to episode 191. Episode 190 will go down in history as an episode that sounds like garbage. My name's Rob. That's Jason.
So, here in Michigan, where we live, Kalamazoo specifically, the weather has been garbage.
Gotten like 7 inches in the last 48 hours.
Yeah, it's not awesome. So we were supposed to record last night.
Seven inches of snow, to be clear.
Yeah, our normal Tuesday night recording, but it was not safe for Rob to drive to my house. So we were going to postpone and record later this week, and then that fell through. Plus, the weather, surprise, is supposed to get crappy again later this week. So
yeah.
So we are recording in my office here at work on lunch, because we get it done one way or another.
One way or another. We made a promise.
And we realize there's a vent in my office. It's kind of loud, so I'm not sure how bad this sounds right now, because we can't hear it. We're just using our portable recorder, but I'm sure it doesn't sound great. So sorry.
Apologies.
Yeah,
apologies.
Sorry about that. You've listened to worse. I promise this sounds better than the episode that we recorded where we were trying to book our Gen Con tickets. Because I think that sounded worse than anything else.
Which, by the way, that's coming up.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Badge registration's on the 22nd, and then housing's on the 24th. That's a Sunday.
So 2 days later?
2 days later.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We should probably record that again. They sent out an email earlier this month that basically said, hey, we looked at all your feedback from last time. We've decided not to make any changes to our process, but we're going to try to make sure the servers don't crash this time.
Well, that would be half the battle. If the servers don't crash, people won't get incorrect information,
yeah,
in theory. So
that's at least a step in the right direction. But what it means is that they're still going to be doing the random lottery,
right,
of who gets a hotel room when.
So we should make a list of rooms that we are happy with.
Yeah.
Like the ranking, so that we don't have to, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, it's Embassy and then Hyatt, and then probably, what, the J-Dub?
I would say Embassy is always going to be my first, only because of the convenience of having two rooms.
Yeah.
That is really, I mean, it's worth the walk just for that.
Yeah.
After that, I would actually, the Westin would be my second choice.
You think so?
Only because, like, the Westin's attached. Like,
well,
the Hyatt is, too, I think, but
mostly attached, pretty much.
The Westin is the main Skybridge.
It is, yeah, but the Westin is a lot. You have to make a big detour all the way around to get back. Because back when,
oh, right, yeah, back
know,
in the day, it
was,
like,
day, it
was the
perfect.
Best, right? Because it was right across from the convention.
Right,
the
but now I feel like it's a little bit farther away than the
Hyatt. That's true. I mean, I guess if you're going to stay in the Westin, you might as well stay at the J-Dub. Because that,
yeah,
you just walk across the street,
right,
and then you're in the same part of the convention center. And the,
right,
J-Dub is nice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I think the Westin fills up really fast as well.
I think
well.
So, because it's attached.
Yeah. So, yeah, so really, yeah, I would be fine with, I think if it wasn't Embassy, my second choice would be the J-Dub, only because it's so nice. There's a nice restaurant right in there that's easy
it's
to
true.
Deal with.
The Hyatt had the great lobby, though, man.
It did, but the J-Dub has, like, 42 great lobbies.
That's true.
I bet it has, like, 35 great lobbies.
It has
at least
78
seven,
lobbies.
At
78
least,
lobbies.
At least,
one better than the next.
Yes,
yeah,
it's true. Lobby-rific is,
yeah,
what that is. We'll have to book events coming up soon then. Oh gosh, we have so
I think event registration's already open. Like, or submission, I should say. I think event submission's already open.
Get on that.
We should, yeah.
Because the later we wait, the more hosed we get.
Yeah,
so
we need some contestants too for the,
yeah,
the Iron Designs.
We gotta
here.
Look for some beef happening here.
Yeah, if builders, if you know of any beef going on, let us know. We want to exploit that beef.
Or if you would like to just see two people have beef magically, you should tell us those designers, let us know. We're always interested in feedback. We'll likely ignore it, like usual, but
hey,
but your feedback is still interesting.
It certainly doesn't hurt.
We take note. Yeah, so that's exciting that we got to do that. We also want to remind you then that with that Iron Design contest this year, judging this year, one of the judges is guaranteed to be Joshua J. Mills.
You betcha.
Because he's a loser, so he gets
yep.
to be a judge.
Yep.
And, you know, and then the other thing would be that Tagmeyer is going to help us design it, which just really makes me pity the designers that are going to be in this challenge.
Yeah, you bet.
Because I have a feeling he's going to have some super mean ideas. So
I hope so.
I honestly, like, if Josh had won, I would be more concerned for them because I could see him just being absolutely terrible.
He's a wild card.
The only person I could see that would be more mean to people in general would be Matt Riddle. But he'll never win, even if he was ever in the contest.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Yeah. But he would be super mean, right? Like, he would be... I could see him being, like, the meanest.
Yeah.
So,
being just...
Yeah.
Just practically violent.
Yeah.
I can see violence in that man's eyes.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
It glints off his head a little, too.
Right. You know, the shine.
Yeah.
When he doesn't powder it.
So, but yeah, so if you guys have any game designer suggestions, let us know. We have, I'm sure we will come up with ideas. I know we've discussed some things.
Mm-hmm.
This will be the third year. We want to make it awesome again. And we'll have to talk too. If you have any suggestions for judges that we should talk to, by all means, let us know. Last year we had Bruno Cathala, and we also had TC Petty, only because TC won a contest, not because we like him. So
he
maybe,
listen to this, so
maybe we could have another contest and find a judge.
We could have
we
another
could
contest.
That might be fun.
That might be fun.
Yeah, that might be fun. And then you could come to Gen Con and be mean to contestants. So,
right.
Yeah.
So,
do you have any suggestions on a celebrity judge that we should harass? Let us know.
Mm-hmm.
Because we got Bruno last year, we can always use that to be like, last year the head judge was Bruno Cathala. So if you're interested, we think you'd be even better than him, even if that's a lie. So...
I mean, yeah, that's definitely a lie, but...
Because he was pretty great as a judge.
Nice.
He was pretty great.
He's a nice man.
Yeah.
He's a very nice man. And a great judge.
Yeah, and a great judge. And, yeah. So, yeah, all right. Well,
so, yeah, what's new with you?
Not a whole lot.
Did you play any games lately?
Yeah, I've... my wife and I played some more games. Once again, played Dwarven Miner again.
Oh, yeah, boy,
just two
a while.
Player. Yeah. So we played it, I think I talked about playing it last time we recorded, and then my wife was like, hey, let's play that again. So we played that. That was fun. Played some more Don't Break the Ice by my son's request. But then we actually did something different. My wife and I played a game against each other.
Oh, yeah?
Like, because I was like, what is Cutthroat Don't Break the Ice for that? Because we were playing with our son. We're not really, like, we win sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's okay, but, like... We're not, like, actively, like, strategically playing, right?
Right.
We're like, I tap out easy bricks, and I try to make sure that he has at least some options, because otherwise sometimes he just goes for the center because he doesn't know any better, and he's learning.
Yeah.
So to try and teach him strategy, I try to give him strategic moves to teach him, you know? But with Steph and I was like, let's play a game where we just try and hose each other. And I honestly can't remember who won. I think she won.
Uh-huh.
But I don't remember, but it came down to the classic Don't Break the Ice scenario where you've got the bridge across the center, right?
Yeah, sure.
And, like, there are four cubes holding up the main guy, and there's literally not a winning move to make there.
Right.
The only thing you can do is knock him in.
Knock him in, yeah.
Which my son, thanks to my wife naming things weird, my son asked what his name was, and I said, I don't know what his name is. And he said, Mommy, what's his name? And she said, it's Mr. Bean. So now
Mr.
he
Bean.
Thinks the guy who's skating... is Mr. Bean.
Mr. Bean, like Rowan Atkinson,
yeah.
Mr. Bean,
so,
saying...
Which I don't think she's ever actually watched.
She doesn't
just,
know.
She's just aware of.
Okay.
Right? So, yeah, so Mr. Bean.
To be fair, that's the kind of situation Mr. Bean would find himself
it
in.
It does seem like that, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so...
Right.
So I just thought it was funny because, so now Josiah's always like, did Mr. Bean fall in the water? He did.
He did.
So,
he does.
I want to give a shout-out to a ton of builders... who have tweeted us when they were listening to the show.
That's
way to go,
awesome.
Builders.
Yeah.
I appreciate that you were doing that. It was interesting to see. It's funny, I just stopped to pick up my kids yesterday, and my phone dings, and it was Facebook Messenger. And I look, and it's Mark Spector, and he says, I hate Twitter. I'm listening right now. He said, also, just so you know, I have a podcatcher, too. So, so I downloaded another day to listen to. So it was interesting to hear that feedback from listeners. So thank you for doing that. I was surprised.
Cool.
So,
it's been fun to see those tweets roll in all week.
Yeah, I
yeah.
know, right? So that's
so,
been pretty cool.
Let's see, I finally got around to playing Hostage Negotiator. I borrowed your copy several months ago and finally just sat down and played it the other night. And, you know, I've been skeptical of solo games for a long time, and I think I've pitched a couple not really understanding what they're all about. Because, like I said a dozen times before, sometimes I like to trying to use mechanics and do things that I don't understand to try and gain a better understanding.
Which is really smart.
Yeah, and it wasn't clicking for me with solo games until I played Hostage Negotiator. And, man, that's a really good game, dude.
It's stressful. It's really stressful.
It's stressful. And, boy, I failed miserably in my first game. But second time around, I knew exactly what I had done wrong. And I mean, of course, the roll of die doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to win the next time. But I at least immediately had a better strategy and came through the second time and won. And I lost.
Right.
I ended up having, 11 hostages. Because it was the guy started with 7. And then I got the card that he took 4 more.
Oh, no! Which can actually be useful, right? Because
it ended up being useful. Yeah.
You can stay alive longer.
Right. But
so you feel bad for the more hostages that are going to die.
Yeah, because... Yeah, but anyway, I ended up saving all but 3 of them.
Oh, nice.
So...
So that did save
so
the game for you.
So that saved
my
bacon, yeah.
So...
Yeah, so that was really cool. I played it several times, and it really... I get it now. I get the appeal of solo games. And I get why they can be exciting and fun. And it's because it's kind of like almost like a little bit of puzzle solving. But,
right.
But, you know, with randomness thrown in there that you kind of have to just deal with or adjust for.
It's sometimes the randomness will be too much for you to overcome.
Sure,
you know, I mean, the game is designed well, and it's designed to not have too much randomness in it. But there are some cards, I don't remember what they are, but there's certain points in the game where, like, something bad happens.
Yeah.
I don't know what those cards are called. But
oh, those are terror cards.
Terror cards, yeah. And some of those can be so game-changing in a right situation that you can't come back from them.
Yeah. But some of them are helpful.
Oh, yeah. But they're balanced. They're not balanced. It's just depending on the situation you've gotten yourself into, right?
Yeah.
You know, you may be hosed.
Yeah.
I found a strategy where I played it a lot when it was still in development.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of playtesting on it, and it was, I developed a lot of strategies, right, where you're like, okay, if I do this, like,
mm-hmm.
what is acceptable losses? And it's funny, because back then I was just playing with a homemade copy in cubes, and still you feel indebted to those cubes when they die, right? You're like, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and, like, I had those 3 people die, and I won. Technically, I won the game, but I was like, no, I totally failed because 3 people died on my watch.
Right.
I felt that way immediately. Immediately. I felt terrible.
I enjoyed the first tweet you had when you lost. It was like, it's like I was working for the hostage taker.
Yeah.
because
everyone died.
Everyone died.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
and there was nothing that I could do to stop that from happening because I was playing so poorly.
Right, yeah, and that's, and there's, you have to kind of get used to the dice and
mm-hmm.
how they're, what...
And there's a rhythm to it as well.
Right,
yeah, right. So that was really, really a lot of fun. Also, on the subject of Van Ryder Games, I am now allowed to say that Saloon Tycoon will be hitting Kickstarter in February.
Cool.
Guaranteed. We don't have an official specific launch date yet, but I think the target is early to mid-February.
Cool.
And don't have pricing or anything like that yet either, but keep your eyes open, keep your ears open. Saloon Tycoon is going to be, it's going to be up. It's probably less than 30 days from now. It should be.
Wow.
And that kind of came out of nowhere for me. Like, I've been known to expect it in first quarter for a little while,
mm-hmm.
but... all of a sudden, it's less than a month away, and that's, I'm starting to get nervous now. Like, I haven't been nervous this entire time at all. I haven't had any anxiety, but now that I'm less than a month out, I really feel a little tension there.
Yeah, I bet. That's gotta be scary.
Yeah,
so
and I'll keep you guys posted. As I get more details, we'll make sure to talk about them here, but yeah, look out for that. Saloon Tycoon. Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Well, so for the topic today, so next episode was going to be us talking about Unpub. I thought rethought the schedule, and it would have been next episode, but kind of doing our check-in. But since we're kind of recording off the cuff, we thought, hey, Unpub is off the cuff. Why don't we just talk about Unpub? And that's something where, so we've both made some progress. Not as much as, of course, we hoped to, because with another week, I think that I would have had my prototype made. But do you want to start? You want me to start?
I don't care either way.
Okay, I can go.
Okay.
So I have not tested Shipwreck Shore again because I've been prepping a game for the Dice Hate Me Challenge, which by the time you guys hear this, I think is the stuff is already due.
I think it's due to the day this posts.
Okay, so yeah. So they're doing, they had the game last year, the deck building game. So they're doing kind of another silly thing like that. And I mean silly in an endearing way, but because the games are actually quite good. So I decided for the heck of it to take one of my games and enter in that. An idea I had, actually theme changing it, fit extremely well into one of that formats. So I'll talk more about that on the next episode, because then I'll have everything finalized and entered, because I'm getting close to entering, but I don't want to say anything until I've got it all figured out, because I don't want to say one thing and then have it be something different. So I'm not afraid of someone stealing my idea, especially because you'd have like 12 hours to do it if you listen to the show on day one. But I mean, I just want to have it all in writing, and maybe I'll actually, on my next episode, my next pitch, maybe I'll pitch that game just for the heck of it.
Yeah.
So you guys can see about it. And I can also explain that all the things I did to try and draw positive attention to it to the judges, based on the silliness of the contest and the kind of the fun theme ideas that they're looking for. So we'll see. If I do well, I'll attribute it to all that. If I don't, I'll just attribute it to the game not being good enough. So,
or them having not, terrible taste.
Or they're just not like pandering, you know.
Right.
So,
Okay.
So I've been spending some time on that. So I haven't done anything new with Shipwreck Store. I've got the next version built that you and I were actually going to test today.
Right.
But instead we're recording an episode. So maybe later this week or next week we can test it. The big work I've been doing is all on my mining card game, which right now does not have a name.
Now, I'm not sure if, do we officially say on the show
No, I didn't. So remember, my racing game, it was my bridge racing game.
The game you pitched at Grand Con.
Yeah, that I pitched at Grand Con for the contest. That game is now about racing mine carts, like gnomes or dwarves or whatever, racing mine carts through mines. And it actually, I don't remember where this came from, because at one point I was talking to someone, and I don't remember who, but they had said, what about like gnomes collecting gems? Because we were really looking for a color thing to tie colors into it, because that's one of the main things of the game. And I thought that, nah. And then one day it just hit me, like, mine carts. Like, that would be fun. Like, I think of Indiana Jones, right, when they're riding in the... and it also fits very well because the movement is very rigid, right? And so track switches could be the big thing that allows you to change lanes. So thinking more on that, I was trying to figure out how to make that work. And the original game had a bunch of had punch boards, right? Because that was one of the things they gave us. And I punched out the punch boards and then made those be the bridge.
Right.
And you could pull pieces out. It was really cool, but it was also really a pain in the butt when you were trying to take things out and not knock pieces off and stuff.
Yeah.
So I really started to focus on how to slim the game down and make the game a smaller game, first of all, because why not? It's a fun, silly theme. It doesn't need to be a big game. I want it to be a fast racing game that goes quick. So one of the things that was brought to me at Grand Con was Jason Katarski and I think Patrick Nickel, when they played it, they play tested it with me, because Patrick really liked it and he wanted Katarski to see it, they had suggested, what about tarot cards, right, with other cards on top of them, and you could slide those cards back and forth. And that sounds neat, but just as much of a pain to deal with the sliding, even more so, right? Because you're moving. So I was messing around with that, playing with size, and then all of a sudden it hit me, like, why not just use poker cards and just use poker cards to just... So you lay out... The game comes with, like, 32 poker cards, and they could be double-sided to have a bunch of extra tracks, but you randomly lay out... you don't randomly lay out. Sorry. At the beginning of the game, you build the track together, because the idea being that you want to build the track that's best for you, right?
Yeah.
So there are 10 cards that each have two spaces out. So it's still 20 spaces of a race. Mm-hmm. Some of the cards are straight, some are dead ends, some are switch tracks that run into each other. But there's always... It doesn't matter if the tracks line up or not, because they always will, right? Okay. Sure, a track might end and then pick up on the next one, but then it just forms a gap, right, that you would have to get past.
Okay.
And so... In the game, you used to be able to spend time to, like, blow up pieces, but now you just swap a card out. So there's, like, four cards always sitting up top, and you can choose to, you can either choose to swap like you can choose to take a card and maybe flip it over if that was if they were double sided, but or you can look at the cards out front, pay two energy to swap out those two cards.
Yeah.
Except for I think that other the card you got would get discarded and the new one would come down, right? Off
okay.
the deck. And then eventually when those ran out, you'd just reshuffle and
sure,
you'd
sure.
have the extra ones. That way you always are, you know, strategically like, oh, this piece is really good for you. So I want to hide it. So the gems, the colored gems, are what determine your free moves. Because as you were moving, if you hit your color, you got a free move. So basically, your gems energize you. So when you hit a gem, it's for free to move out of that square. You pay to move into it, it's free to move out of it.
Okay.
And I was going to make it so that I wanted to, of course, add variable player powers, right?
Yeah.
It was actually suggested to me by many that that's something this game could use. So I was going to add a specialty card, because everybody has a deck of five cards they use in the game, and I was going to add a specialty card, and then I thought, no, I'm just going to have a trigger ability and or passive abilities, because I really like passive abilities,
mm-hmm.
and with the cards, that doesn't really work, because
sure.
when you have to pay to use a passive ability, it's literally the opposite of the definition of passive. So,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, so now the characters will have a card, just one of the poker cards is a character card, and what that allowed me to do was, the game came with energy cubes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And each player had five energy cubes. And cubes are not the cheapest thing if you're trying to make your game a little smaller.
Yeah.
So I actually decided to have an extra card for each player
mm-hmm.
that just has, now instead of 1 through 5, 1 through 7 energy, and you start with 5, and when you replenish back to 5, but there may be ways that you can, because on the board there are
okay.
energy spots, where you could earn energy to get yourself beyond 5 up to 7,
okay.
so you could have like a mega turn where you did a bunch of stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? So yeah, I've got a lot of balancing to do with it, and I'm working on a prototype right now, but I'm really thematically happy with it. Everything
yeah,
kind of justifies itself.
So if you've got four players, you've got four lanes?
No, there's
no.
only ever three lanes.
Only ever three lanes,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
So that's because I want it to be tight. And one of the reasons is because one of the main mechanics of the game that I feel like is different than every other racing game I've ever seen is
mm-hmm.
If I move, if you're in front of me and I move forward, I push you forward.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way that changes it, in the original game, you could move straight, you could move only orthogonally, right?
Yeah.
Well, you kind of can move diagonally now because of the way the track would
yeah,
turn.
Yeah, right.
Because that just logistically makes sense. So, like, if we're going and there's a switch track and I want to take it, I would push you forward one more and then I would take the switch track.
Okay.
But if that was a stop and you're stopped and I can't get to the switch track, we're stuck. Like, my move ends, right?
Yeah.
I did add in a jump card that will allow you to hop over something.
Okay, cool.
Or hop tracks.
Hop tracks, sure.
Only because I don't want somebody to ever get stuck, right? Like, they're in a dead end, and now they can't get out
yeah,
of it.
So you can jump out of a dead end to the next track.
Right.
Gotcha.
But it's playing a card, so it's going to cost you two energy, so it's not...
Yeah.
I also eliminated, for now, the ability to... used at the beginning, roll a d20, and then... One of the squares that was, so there's 10 cards, but that's, so 1 through 2 is card 1, 2 through 4 is card 2,
mm-hmm.
And you could swap one of those out. I've changed that for now only because I feel like it doesn't justify adding a 20-sided die to the game.
Sure.
To do that, to add that random chaos.
Yeah.
Because now it allows you to be a little more controlled about it, which I think is good. For what the game is morphing into, I think that actually makes more sense.
Sure.
So I'm going to try it that way. If it turns out that I miss the random destruction, because the idea before was the bridge was blowing up and falling apart as you were on it.
Sure.
So you rolled the die, and whatever number you got, you either took something out or replaced it in that one for the purpose of trying to keep the thing going crazy and falling apart.
Yeah.
The track should do that on their own now.
Yeah.
Because instead of having a set... Here's all the lanes. Now it's going to be here's broken lanes and here's things where you need to do other things. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. So that's
great.
I feel really good about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't played it, but I mean,
right.
I played
you know.
My initial version and that was really fun.
Sure.
And I feel like this is a good iteration. So I feel like I have a good reason to feel good this time, rather than most game designs where you're like, this is going to be awesome on your first play and then it's not.
Yeah.
I feel like this already is a good. Step in the right direction.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Okay. Good.
All right.
Great.
Your turn. What do you got?
Yeah. So I'm still working on Smithereens. So I think builders, if you listened to the bonus episode last week, you heard our playtest of that. So I played that version once with Christine, once with you, and incorporated a lot of comments from what we discussed in that episode. And builders, I know sometimes it's tough to get through our bonus episodes where we do a playtest. They can be a little boring. So maybe if you just want to skip ahead to like the last 20 minutes if you're interested in the conversation.
Right. It's a really good conversation where I feel like we discovered some really good things about the game, about what your intentions were slash compared to what was happening, right?
Yeah.
So
So I won't rehash a ton of that stuff, but basically it just did some tightening up and some balance changes.
Did you end up changing the ammo thing?
I did change
the
ammo thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think that'll make the game go really a lot faster.
Yeah, yeah.
So because what originally happened was every time you played an ammo card, you got to do another roll,
another attack.
But one of the things we had talked about was adding to make it more damage instead. So you have one gun, one roll, but now three ammo cards means four damage for that instead of four rolls.
Right.
With four possible damage.
Right. So it makes one roll mean more.
And it makes you want to beef up one roll.
Right.
Which.
I think is
actually the better outcome from that, because
the
nitro cards, which you really liked, I felt like were boring, because I was like, I have five attacks, why am I going to use a nitro card on one of those?
Yeah.
Well, hey, now I have one attack that's going to do one damage and one that's going to do four damage. I'm going to use my nitro cards on that one, because I want that one to hit.
Right.
So,
likewise, then it makes it a little harder to burn those nitro cards.
Exactly, yes, because that was an easy decision for me, but that certainly makes it harder.
Right, yeah.
So
I updated the prototype, and Christina and I played that once, and it was excellent. Really, really pleased
awesome.
With that. So I've only ever played two-player, though, so I think for further testing, I need to play four-player.
Yes, that's a good... Or even three, just
even
to
three.
Get the...
Yeah.
To get that more interaction.
Right, so I feel super good about how it plays right now. The thing that I don't know yet is... Because it's a player elimination game, right? So what I don't know is how much downtime is there going to be. And it might vary wildly... but I need to understand that. And to see that in action, I need to understand how long from when player one is out, or the first player to be out, once they're out, how long is it going to take until the game is over? So I need to see that happen. And once I see that happen, then I can start thinking about ways to address that.
What if, just I know that's not a problem yet, but that's got to be a problem, right? Because, I mean... Especially like, that'll happen in your playtest setting because people are going to pick on you, right? Like if you, Christine, and I are playing, we're probably going to hang up on you at first.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it generally happens.
Sure.
There's some different things you could do to fix that. One of them could be as simple as having an extra card or cards that, like, the first person to be below X altitude gains this card, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or the first person to be, if someone is ever more than 5 altitude below everyone else,
mm-hmm.
then X happens,
yeah.
right? They get a card to put into their deck that now makes them more powerful.
Sure, kind of certain event triggers.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
that's a good thought.
And you could just make them thematically like, you know, low flying or something
mm-hmm.
like that makes sense with,
mm-hmm.
or like that last danger zone that you've got right above the ground, you know? There are things you could do.
Sure. Another thing that occurred to me with it, though, is also that I need to see play testing to see how I feel about it. But the late game part of that, it gets a little desperate, and that's the point. I want it to get a little
right.
desperate because you burn stuff and your options are limited, and that's part of what creates the tension. But I do have a concern that tension is going to hinge too much on the roll of the dice and the draw of a card, and that player decisions might not have enough agency in how the end of the game rolls out. And so I want to see that in action too, and think about ways to address that and give them more options.
Right.
I thought I could potentially put captains, you know, ship's captains cards.
Uh-huh.
That you could only, with special abilities, that could only be used under a certain altitude or something.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, like, the captain has a different effect at each altitude range?
Or something, or only has an effect at low altitude, or... So,
right.
But, of course, that could also be a thing that's triggered based on other events.
Right.
So that's something that... those are the things that I need to... Once I play the game as it is right now, I'm comfortable with that structure.
Right.
Then those are the things that I kind of need to think about bolting on to make it a complete experience.
I think two things you have going for that to help curb that, because the last game we played, it really felt like we were just rolling dice to shoot each other at the
mm-hmm.
end. making it so they're rolling less dice already helps that.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
now they're amping up their rolls so that one roll matters more.
Right.
And two, they're building the decks and they're burning from the decks. So, like, I don't think you have to feel bad about people drawing poorly because they mm-hmm. built their deck, right?
Yeah.
So, and you cycle through those cards so quickly.
You do, yeah.
That, yeah.
So I just need to see an action, right?
Another possible solution could be that the lower you get, the faster you draw cards.
The faster you draw cards?
Meaning, like, you get more cards the
oh.
lower you get.
Oh, that's a good thought.
So being lower could actually be an advantage,
yeah.
right? So, like, you
or
could
that
have
be a Captain Power or something.
Right.
Yeah.
So, just a thought.
Instead of drawing three, you would get, when you get in the mid altitude, you're going to draw four. When you get to the lowest altitude, you draw five.
Yeah. Because then suddenly you've got all these options in
yeah.
your hand, you know?
That's actually.
And hand size could expand based on that, even then,
yeah.
so that you could.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you wouldn't have to, because
right.
you naturally would just burn cards you didn't want to gain altitude.
Right.
But then that gives an advantage to the player in the lowest area, which I think is always cool, right?
Yeah, right.
So.
Yeah. Drive some strategy, drive some conflict.
Right. And then it makes some people risk going lower to get more stuff, and if they lose and they get eliminated, hey.
Well, yeah.
They made that choice, right?
Right.
So.
Okay. So, anyway, so that's my main focus right now. And it's been going surprisingly well.
Good, yeah. When you're only focusing on one thing, that helps, right?
It sure
I mean,
does.
That makes
it
a lot easier.
But, of course,
so.
In the game that I'm going to pitch today, I'm kind of jonesing about now. So I might have to prototype that as well.
I know how you feel. Because I was working on a game for a game idea for a pitch. I was like, I need to pitch a game this week, which now I don't have to, but... and then I might pitch my other game anyways the next week. But
yeah.
I had this silly game idea about building a band. Like, you're like a music producer,
mm-hmm.
but you don't care about, like, making a band and, like, coaching them and, like, helping them do gigs and stuff. Your job is to package a band
mm-hmm.
and put them out, right? And then you make money. Like, that's what you do. You make a band that fits certain specifications. And you like, they're basically getting orders from record companies. Like, we could really use a band that does blah, blah, blah. But to that end, they actually will give you a card that says, here's the band's name. Make this band. And the band has requirements.
Oh.
And the name, like, the Face Rockers, is a death metal band. But you could get more points if you could sell it as an easy listening band. Or as a rap band or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like... your points values get better if you're willing to take a risk and put more talented people into it to make it fit that other genre.
So basically, the record label's marketing department has come up with a band that they want to start.
Yes.
They have songwriters already working on songs.
Right.
And you're the fixer or whatever.
Yeah.
The guy has
yep.
to go out and recruit members.
Exactly, yeah.
It.
So...
the
kind of
casting
sounds,
director.
Yeah,
it
kind of sounds
yeah.
fun to me. So like,
that's kind of silly.
Yeah.
Like it, yeah,
it's silly, but like, I think it would be some drafting. Like, you'd be drafting musicians, and then you'd be trading with people.
Oh,
like, yeah. And I want to have like a system of money spend where like I could get a musician for up to X value,
mm-hmm.
but I could trade musicians to get more value. So be putting people at a lower value back into the pool, but that might help you because then you're going to take those lower value ones and maybe use them later or maybe spend them later to
sure.
get more stuff. So
you would need things like their attractiveness or something.
Yeah, so they
yeah.
would have like a charisma score, and
right.
then they would have like genres that they're capable in.
Yeah.
And like some, like say a drummer might be capable in all genres, right?
Yeah.
Whereas like a guitar, like a specific kind of guitar player might only be good in one genre, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or two genres, right? So there'd be like six or eight genres, I think,
sure.
of music.
Yeah.
And the idea that like, I just love the idea that like on every card there's the central thing. That's what they're made to do,
mm-hmm.
but here's other things they could do that would score you more points because it's harder,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So the values, everything gets harder to do.
You could almost have like two classes of candidates too. You could have just the plain old session musicians, you know, the guys who are just jack of all trades kind of stuff, but
right.
like their charisma is super low because they're just always in the studio.
Right.
And then you have the
headliners.
The headliners,
yeah.
the boy band people who, though, they're super charismatic, but all
right.
they can do, they can sing one thing in one way, and they have no
right.
versatility at all.
But that could also be, like, the Edge from U2 or Slash, right? Like, so
yeah.
it could be guitar player, but everybody gets jazz, or Eddie Van Halen,
yeah.
right? Like,
yeah.
everybody's jazzed about that musician, so they're, like, your headliners. So
right.
they're, like, your rare cards, right? So
yeah.
when those come out, you maybe only have 10 to spend every turn, and they're going to
yeah.
cost 15.
Yeah.
It means you're going to have to cash in some musicians to get that guy.
Yeah.
But you want that guy because he's going to fit into only a couple genres, but he's going to make basically
right.
make the band and give you a bunch of bonus money for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought it sounded kind of like fun. So like that, very against what I would normally do thematically. So anyway, I'll pitch that in the next few episodes.
Okay.
I might prototype that because I kind of like that better than Shipwreck Shore right now. So
don't
we'll see.
Distracted, man.
No,
I'm gonna
do a couple more playtests of Shipwreck Shore, and I wanna know how fun you think it is.
Okay. Yeah.
Because right now it feels very mechanical.
Uh-huh.
But the theme should make it feel more fun. So I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but
okay.
we'll see. So
yeah.
I'm trying very hard not to get distracted. I allow myself to give enough information to do a pitch, which I just gave you like half of, but that's all right.
So, whatever. Just clean it up and we'll do it again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it'll be a few episodes away. So.
Yeah.
All right, so now your turn to actually pitch a game.
Okay. So, and I got my notes here. What just happened? My phone is losing what I'm trying to do. There it goes.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah, okay. So after playing Hostage Negotiator, I said, you know what? I understand better how a solo game can be good, so let me take a crack at this one more time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let me see if I can come up with an idea that feels interesting to me. Okay, so, and I bounced around through a lot of theme ideas, and then I was lying in bed the other night, and I was like, you know, I don't know that I've ever seen a board game or a card game that was about working in an emergency room.
Yeah, I can't. There may be one, but I can't think of one off the top of my head.
And if there are some, I would think that they're probably more about, like, managing the hospital or,
right.
I don't know.
Like a pandemic, right? Where it's like about manage your doctors, but you're, you know,
right.
Doing something different.
Yeah, so I'm probably missing something. But at any rate, so I'm just calling this right now emergency room.
Okay.
And so you, the player, are kind of the call it the, what's the main doctor? The attending?
Chief.
Or?
The
probably wouldn't be the chief.
The attending is like the, yeah, like if there's a bunch of other doctors, Grey's Anatomy tells me that the attending is important.
Okay. They're a big
because they've been there for a while. So they're not a resident, they're an attending. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, yeah. All right. Yeah.
So you're
but
the,
they could also be like the chief of the ER or something.
You're the medical person who's in charge of the emergency room.
I like attending, that sounds good.
Okay. All right. Look at my notes here. So this is a solo game. It's dice and cards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The structure, it's a three-phase structure every turn. And I think the best way for me to explain this is to start maybe by introducing some of the components and then get into the turn structure.
Okay.
So you've got cards. You've got two decks of cards. You've got your patient deck and your doctor deck. Okay. The patient deck is a deck of cards. Each card is a patient. And each card is going to have one, two, or three icons on it. And those icons are different treatment types. And basically identifying the treatments that this patient needs in order to be healed, or at least to be good enough to leave the ER.
Right.
Okay. The doctor deck are cards that you as the doctor may be able to play on your turn that are going to give you bonuses to certain actions, like reroll dice or whatever. Okay. So I can go through some concepts for some of those later. The game also has five dice. And they're custom dice. There are five different icons that could be on the dice. Four of them are the treatment options, which are bandage, stitches, surgery, and medicine. Okay. The other two faces are skulls, or death icons. And if you roll a skull, it doesn't mean somebody dies. It's basically a blank space. This face on this die can't be used for anything. Okay. Then you've also got a player board, and the player board has three sections on it. It's got the waiting room, the kind of the treatment room, or where the beds are, that the doctors actually do the work. And then there's another section outside, which is a rondel. And I talked, I think, last week or week before about how wanting to try and use a rondel
mm-hmm.
to help me understand that as well. So I'm throwing this in here. Okay. So in the treatment room, there are four beds. That means you can be working on up to four patients at any given time. The waiting room has three chairs in it, so you can have no more than three patients sitting in the waiting room at any given time. So, and then the rondel has five pie slices on it that correspond to the five icons that are on the dice.
That makes sense.
Right. So, start of the game, first time you're playing, you're going to shuffle your patient deck. You're going to put one patient on each of the four beds, and they're going to be face up so you can see what treatments they need. what their illnesses are, or whatever. Okay. When you fully you fully treat a patient by rolling your dice and assigning dice to fill those slots, and if that patient needs two bandages and some medicine, then you need two dice that are bandage and one die that is medicine. You put those on the slot, and you heal that patient. Okay. So, let's see. So, you put the stuff on the... I'm getting into the turn order, so we can talk that through now. You start the game, you put your patients out there, your waiting room's empty, no problem. So, first phase of the game is your triage phase. You roll all of your available dice, and then you assign them to patients in beds. Okay? A die can only be used once during the triage phase. Additionally, you can assign any free procedures from the rondelle. I'll come back to the rondelle. If any patients are healed, you can put them in the healed pile or discard pile or whatever, and they're done. If you assign dice to a patient to fill a slot, but you don't have enough to completely heal the patient, you can just leave that die there for the next turn if you want. It'll just sit there. You're not going to get to re-roll it, but you have to decide that right now if you're going to take it back and hope you get a better result next time, or if you just leave it there to just kind of hold over for next time. And thematically, you're basically assigning... You're assigning other doctors to do these tasks for you.
Right, that makes total sense. Yeah.
So, you could play doctor cards at some point during this turn if you want to. Again, depending on what the doctors are going to do, you might even have a doctor card that allows you to roll an extra die. So, I think it technically would be six dice in the game.
Okay.
But on a standard turn, you'd only roll five the most. And again, if you roll death icons, nobody dies, they're just wasted dice.
Right.
Okay. Next, you move on to your intake phase, okay? If you have any vacant beds, you would take any patients from the waiting room and put them into beds. Patients in the waiting room, the cards are face down. You don't know what their illnesses are until you get them into the treatment area and get them on a bed and you can diagnose them, right? You don't know what's wrong with them, though, as long as they're in the waiting room. So the first thing you try and do is you try and fill in any empty beds from the waiting room. Then, patients in the waiting room are always sliding forward. They're always moving forward to the next chair. Okay. You can never have more than three patients in the waiting room at a time. And before you put a new patient out, all the cards move forward one slot before a new patient comes out. Because the longer they sit there, the longer it takes that they're not getting treatment.
Right.
And if they're there for three consecutive turns without getting treatment, then they're going to fall off the chair dead. Okay, that's, again, thematically the thing, right?
Thematically sad, but yes.
Sad, right.
Yes.
And if somebody dies, you lose the game. You
right.
lost. And balancing, I might need four chairs. I don't know. See how that goes.
But you want to keep it at nobody dies.
That's the idea. You don't want anybody to die in your shift. Okay. After you shift cards forward, then you take a new patient card off the deck and put it into the first chair. Okay. Next is our planning phase, or our rondelle phase. You're going to choose your next rondelle action. So your rondelle has the five treatment options, or the four treatment options and the skull on it. And you're going to have a marker that's on one of those things. At the start of the game, it's going to be on the skull.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever position that marker is on means that all treatments of that type are free for that turn. So if you have that patient who came in that needs two bandages and a medicine, and your marker for that turn is on the bandage, free bandages.
Right.
All you need to heal that patient is a medicine, and you're good. There's nothing to it, right?
Cool.
Okay. And as long as with the marker on there, that's free. And you can leave that marker there for the entire turn if you want. Hey, no problem. And then bandages are free for the entire turn. But at the end of the turn, you can reassign. For every space, clockwise or counterclockwise around, or every pie slice you want to move your marker, costs one die. And what that means is that's a die that you have to set aside. You're sending that doctor off to go get more supplies or whatever,
uh-huh.
and for the next turn, you cannot roll that die.
Okay.
Okay. Now, that die will be back after the end of the next turn, though. So if you, again, if you're going to make that change, that's only going to hurt for one round, but after that, you're going to get big benefits from it.
Right. Because you're sending to go get this stuff. Once they're back, they're back.
Right. Once they're back, they're back. The difference there is if you put it on the skull, then what that means is if you roll three skulls... while you have the marker on the skull, then that's a wild card. You can use that as a free thing for anything. Okay.
Cool.
And that might be a little out of balance as well. I need to see how that fits.
And the doctor cards have treatments on them as well?
Yeah. Sometimes it might just be a simple treatment card, or sometimes it might let you make changes or whatever. And I'll get into those. I don't have them all written out, but I have some concepts for those. Okay. So that's it. The end of the round. The new round starts. Roll your dice and whatever dice you can, and away you go. And you keep going and you keep treating people until the patient deck runs out. And you want to get through the entire patient deck, treat all your patients without anybody dying. That's the idea.
That sounds cool.
So doctor cards, I'm thinking they would be free procedures. Like one card is a bandage, and there you go. You can spend that anytime you want. Could be a wild. You use this for anything. Might allow you to reroll a die. You could potentially take a die back. If you spent that die to move the rondelle, you could then spend that card at the beginning of the turn to get that die back so you can roll it.
You could have one where, like, it's a, like, super specialized doctor, so, like, they just swoop in and they save the patient no matter what.
Sure,
right? Like,
yeah, could do that. You could swap a patient back and forth with the waiting room, you know? Hey, they're stabilized, let's put them back in the waiting room and get somebody else in here, you know?
You could have one that's transferred to a specialty center or something like that.
Sure.
I can't save this guy, I'm just going to send him somewhere else.
I talked about roll an extra die. Other cards, you could do special things with death cards or death icons on your dice. Maybe even an extra bed that you can use for one turn or for one patient or something, you know?
Right. Because just even for that one turn, if you could get that patient in to the bed so they don't fall off the chair,
right,
and then hopefully clear out extra ones on the next turn.
And then the last thing is, the way you get cards is that if you don't use any of your rondelle abilities on your turn, at the end of the turn you could draw another card.
Okay.
So you may choose not to use them so you can get more cards and give you more options.
But it starts on the worst one.
It starts on the worst one that's going to be the least used.
Yeah.
But at times, I'm thinking maybe three skulls is wrong. Maybe it should be two skulls.
I think two would be more. Yeah, I think two would be better. Because then you have the chance of getting two. Like, you could get two wilds.
Yeah, you could.
If you have four skulls, which
right.
is not bad. I mean, that's pretty good.
That's all right.
Because then you have another thing. You have three solid treatment options.
Right.
Two of which are whatever you want them to be.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So. So that's basically emergency room as a solo game. We'll see how my time goes. I might like to prototype that. I've never done anything with custom dice before.
Yeah.
You know, which is kind of fun. So,
another option for the skulls could be three skulls means you treat the patients.
Oh, three skulls, just get rid of one?
Get rid
done.
Of one, yeah. So that might be a simpler way to do it.
That just might even be.
If you get three skulls, they're out.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to deal with being wild.
Right.
They're
and then you might, if you get a skull, you might save a skull for the next turn.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if you get two, you might save those two for the next turn, whatever.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not bad. It's probably better. I like that better, actually.
And then people might actually be able to keep it on there for a while at the beginning, you know, mm-hmm. while things are ramping up.
Yeah.
And maybe that's too powerful. Who knows?
But
that is spending more than half your dice to save one patient, which could be a good deal if it's a patient that has a bunch of stuff wrong with them that's going to take a bunch of stuff,
mm-hmm.
a bunch of treatment. So.
Yeah. And I think most of the cards would be twos and threes. There would be very few ones in there.
Right.
Probably, maybe even mostly threes.
Yeah, mostly threes, a few twos, and just a couple of ones.
Yeah.
Because the ones are great, like when they flip it, you're like, oh, sweet, this kid needs his stitches, done,
yeah.
get out of here.
Like, it was probably 40% threes, you know, 30%, well, I don't know, anyway, whatever, I can mess with percentages,
Even if it was 50% threes,
right.
30-20.
30, yeah. 50,
or
50.
Even 50-40-10.
Yeah.
Might be all right.
Yeah. So anyway,
how many cards are you thinking?
You know, I don't know.
Patients?
I don't want it to go on so long that it just gets tedious. So I think probably I would start by testing it with 12 patients, because at the start of the game you get four out there, and that will leave eight more to get through before the game ends.
Right.
I might want to do 16.
Yeah. If you did like 16 or more, you could say to make the game more or less difficult.
Yeah.
Have more or less patience.
Sure, right,
know?
Right. I would probably do like a deck of 20 or 26 or something total, and then you just shuffle them and take the top.
Depending on how difficult you want the game to be, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you want it to be really difficult, you can take all of them, but it's going to be really hard.
Right.
So, and probably take a while.
Yeah, right. So that's kind of what I'm thinking. And then Dr. Cards, I don't know. You probably won't use a ton during the game, considering that it's kind of difficult to get them.
Right.
I think at the start of the game, you would start with a hand of three. So I could probably get away with, you know, 20-something doctor cards as well.
Yeah, it feels like you'd want to use the doctor cards when you had four patients, three patients sitting out there, and you need to clear a couple beds. You play those doctor cards, clear the beds, and then get those guys in to try and make it a little safer.
So, right, right. That's kind of what I'm thinking. So I mean,
last ditch.
Yeah, component wise, it's pretty light. I mean, like
the
really
the custom dice obviously is not cheap. But.
Yeah, but apart from that, everything else is pretty simple
there's
stuff.
There's no board.
There would be a player board, a tableau of some kind. Yeah, yeah.
So yeah,
yeah.
Cool.
So there you
go. The player cards could say the treatment cards could almost be smaller cards, even. You know what I mean?
Well, I was thinking about the patients being half-size cards.
Yeah, because why not, right?
Yeah.
Just set them on the beds.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to need a bigger board.
They would only need big enough to put three dice across on.
Right.
You know, and I think that'd be fine.
Right. Cool.
So, that's the idea. That would be a really easy one for me to throw up on GameCrafter, too, if I get it working.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Probably pretty cheap. Yeah.
Cool.
So.
All right. Well, hey, we are running actually short on time here. Not necessarily on the show, but for recording. So.
Right, because we got to get back to work. We're going to not do any Twitter questions or anything.
Yeah, no, we've got some stuff. We'll save it for next episode.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So thanks, everybody, listening. Thanks for suffering through the bad sound here. I'm sorry about that. Next week, we should be back to normal. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to buildinggamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at podcastbtg. Jason's at Jay Slingerland. I'm at poorly_design. You can call our Google voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. You can like us on Facebook, 5-star review on iTunes, and other podcast places. Do those things, buy our games, buildinggamepodcast.com.
Woo-hoo.
And we'll see you guys next week. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios. All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.